broadcasting worldwide from the beautiful hill country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone. OneRadioNetwork.com. That's where we would be. You're going to meet Alexander Dunlop in just a moment. I think you'll find him interesting. I'm looking forward to speaking with Mr. Dunlop, who's done a lot of things. Well, tomorrow we have Andrew Goss and the real world of money. Then on Thursday, what's going on Thursday? Ah, a couple fun things. Lady, about feng shui. I don't think we've talked about that for years and years. And then also, a lady who's really into nutrition and health. And she's going to tell us some of the latest research on Splenda. So if you have your neighbors and uncles and aunts eating this stuff, you might have them tune in, or you can, because I know you don't eat this stuff, do you? Hope and fun Friday. On Friday, it's a really kind of dark, kind of overcast kind of thing going on here today. So we'll bring a little sunshine with Alexander Dunlop. Mr. Dunlop is a fascinating fellow. He is a life coach. Excuse me, I'm getting all choked up here. We just started the interview. And he's just done so many things. His website is called spiritualnutrition.org. We can all use a little bit of that. And he talks about why we're here, who we are, and what's it all about, Alfie. And we love talking about those kinds of things. Mr. Dunlop, good morning.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for having me on your show. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you here. Where do you live?
I am in New York City.
New York City. Oh, my goodness. So here you are looking for the meaning of life, and you've done all these things around the world, from Harvard to rolling down the Grand Canyon on the Colorado River, a consultant on Wall Street, been a waiter, a bartender. You have tats. You even got tats. You were trained as an evangelical Protestant minister. I mean, all these things. And so you would think you'd be in a cave somewhere in India. You know, I'm just kidding.
But I was there, actually, at one point.
You did that, too.
Yes.
So why New York City, Alexander?
Oh, well, at the moment, it's because this is where my children are.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up here because I came to work here. I never expected that I would end up in New York City, but after I graduated from the seminary, I was thinking to be a Roman Catholic priest, and I left that behind, and I was looking for work, and I found work on Wall Street. So that moved me to New York, and then I ended up getting married and having children. And I'm now divorced, but my children are here, and I want to be near my children.
I see. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But on a deeper level, too, I feel like New York City at the moment is the capital of the world.
Hmm.
It's as if it were Rome in the middle of the Golden Age,
mm-hmm.
and all roads seem to lead here. So why not be here and broadcasting spiritual nutrition that I'd like to share with the world?
Sure. Plus, I would suspect that, well, in the 1900s, let's see, at the turn of this century, in the 1800s, you think that it would probably be London, maybe, and then mm-hmm. and then now New York, maybe?
I would think so. Uh-huh. I was recently reading that New York may not very soon still be in that position, but for now, I think that it is.
Maybe Singapore or Beijing next.
maybe Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. So, what do you think spiritual growth is. We talk about spiritual growth. We were talking about yesterday on the air and how we deal with health. And I always use the term as I grow spiritually. And I don't know if I could really explain it very well, so I hope that maybe you can.
I hope that I can. Well, it is the great question, and it's the question that, of course, a lot of us are interested in. And the irony is that what we think of as growth, we tend to think of in terms of acquiring something, or in terms of the American dream of becoming something or achieving something. So the great irony for us in thinking about spiritual growth is that we tend to think that we're lacking something and that we need to find something or mm-hmm. acquire something.
Right.
And in fact, that's the biggest block to our spiritual growth.
So are you thinking it's more that we're letting go?
Well, the spiritual growth, as I'm understanding it, is becoming completely at peace with exactly who we are right now.
Uh-huh. In this moment.
Right now.
Mm-hmm.
So even to say spiritual growth, it may be misleading because, as I said, we tend to think of the word growth in our understanding of acquiring something or becoming something that we're not. So we're going to, like a little child is going to grow up to be an adult. He's not yet an adult, but he needs to become one.
Mm-hmm.
But to start growing spiritually, starting place is to be completely happy exactly as we are and not trying to be anyone else other than who we are. But of course, for all of us, we've been conditioned to be something or try to be someone that other people have told us to be, whether our parents, or religion, or society, or our culture, our schooling system, always gave us a model of who we're meant to be. And so all of us, myself included, grew up believing that we were meant to be what we were taught to be. And that's not who we are. So the starting point of spiritual growth is to be completely comfortable in who we are. And then, yes, we can actually grow from there, but until we let go of this idea that we need to become something that we're not and come to peace with who we are, we won't start growing.
Mm-hmm. Well said. 8 minutes after the hour with Alexander Dunlop, spiritualnutrition.org. If you'd like to be on the show and join the conversation, I think we'll have great fun here this morning. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. We'll probably do some open phones after Mr. Dunlop is off the air. So talk to us about the idea of being okay with what we've just painted, mm-hmm. and then knowing that maybe we could even do it better tomorrow.
As you mentioned, I've done a lot of different things, and it was all for me about finding the meaning of my life. I had an experience when I was 17 years old that set me on the journey that I've been on to find the meaning of life. And I grew up Catholic, and I think like most of us, nothing much happened growing up other than total boredom and a lot of repressed sexual guilt. But what happened on this experience when I was 17 is there was a retreat, and the priest who I spoke to stood up to pray the traditional prayer of absolution after I went to see him for the face-to-face confession. And when he prayed for me, he put his hands right on my forehead. And as he did, something went whoosh right through my body from head to toe. And I felt clean. I felt something had washed through me. And it was, needless to say, a startling experience and unexpected, but it left me realizing that there was something more behind the dogma. There was something behind the ritual. And that propelled me on my journey. And I went to India. I studied with native shamans. Before that, I was an evangelical minister, and I wanted to be a Roman Catholic priest. And in between, I worked on Wall Street and did the corporate stint. But out of all of that, nothing I ever found helped me understand my purpose in life, like finding the deck of playing cards. The deck of playing cards, unbeknownst to me, much to my surprise, turns out to be the ancient Book of Life. It's been hidden in plain sight all this time, which is, of course, the best place to hide anything. When I really hide something, I just hide it in plain sight. But what we call the deck of cards is actually a little book of our of life. It represents our life on Earth, a mathematical model. So this is a long way of answering your question, which is to say, once we find out what our cards to play are, that's what helps us, in my opinion, the best tool I've found, to be aware of who we are in this life, to be comfortable with who we are, to know what our purpose and our pathway is. And then once we know that, and we stop trying to be something else other than what we're meant to be, then we can start actually playing our cards right. We can start consciously creating the life we want. We can start consciously mastering the game of our life, and that's how we actually do start to grow our lives.
What is your experience, Alexander Dunlop, with the difference between who we are and what we think, what we believe?
Well, that's a really good question. Who we are limitless and timeless beings. We are here to play a game. This planet that we know as our Earth is a playground for us to come and enjoy ourselves. We are infinite souls. We are limitless and timeless. But now what would we do with all of our time, so to speak? Well, we would play games. We would enjoy ourselves. And this Earth is, if you will, like Disney World, or Six Flags Atlantis, or a theme park where we would come and play and enjoy and celebrate our creation, our being alive. But now, that's not typically how we're taught to believe what our lives are. I'm sure you were probably told in some way or another that life is hard work, life is a struggle, life is death and taxes. You have to work. There's a lot of have-tos and shoulds that get piled on us. I have two children. I don't know if you have children or if you've been around young children, but it really is true, and all of our spiritual masters have given us this metaphor to become like little children. Hmm. And when you're around little children, we do see how curious and playful they are. So that, to me, would be the difference. Answer your question.
Yeah.
I mean, who we are and who we're taught to be. So there's a lot of conditioning that happens and a lot of rules that get set for us. And my own journey in my adult life has been a lot of undoing of those rules and undoing of those shoulds and have-tos. But of course, I have two children to feed. I live in New York City. My rent is high and I have a business to run. So there's a delicate balance that I'm navigating between doing exactly what I love to do, and I do love to offer spiritual nutrition. I do love to work with my clients, and the have-tos of life. And that's where my own journey is at the moment, is learning how to navigate the balance between that reality of being alive in this culture where there are obligations, and the truth that I am a limitless and timeless being here to play a game and enjoy myself.
So is it fair to say that you've had spiritual experiences, so what you've just said, that you know and you don't believe, you know it, so you're figuring out creative ways as a life coach, whatever you want to call it, spiritual nutrition, mm-hmm. how to then exchange that for what we know as dollars, and then trade that for food and for the kids. So
yes.
So you're very creative, and doing what you really want to do is what talk about your experiences and help others maybe have their own.
Well, yes, that's right. And this is a conversation that I've had in various ways with my elders and my peers and other people in my own spiritual community in a different time and place. No, not too long ago, maybe 150 years ago, 200 years ago, folks such as myself would have been completely supported by the community.
Right, yeah.
Right? The priest, the rabbi, the shaman didn't work. We were a product of the community, and we supported we were in service of the community. But we're in a capitalist culture now. So how do we translate that same service, the same role that I play, in a capitalist model? And this is an ongoing question, and this is what I'm navigating mm-hmm. even now as we speak.
Mm-hmm. But I would argue if you're on the right track and doing your dream and really serving, that's an energy that's going to be exchanged in energy, and you're going to have the money that you need somewhere along the line. You've probably experienced that.
Well, absolutely.
Right? You've probably experienced that.
Yes, absolutely, and it has tested all of my faith as well.
That'll do it, man. You got to make my house payment.
Yeah, exactly. It has absolutely made me walk my talk and, so to speak, put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah,
because I'm preaching these things and teaching these things, and yet living by my own teachings.
Yeah,
and yeah.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So often, Alexander Denlet, we hear the idea, do your dream and then your money will follow and all that. What is your insights into that? I'm sure so many of our listeners are thinking, boy, I'd sure like to do something other than what I'm doing.
Well, that is another great question. You're getting me with some really good questions. I appreciate it. So here's what I say about that, and I've seen this happen many times in my coaching practice. Is that when we start to play our cards right, and we can talk a little more detail about what that means.
Okay.
Right? But when we start to play our cards right for our life, and I've seen this over and over again, and it's worked for me as well, that's when our lives start to become magical.
Hmm.
So we actually align ourselves with all the invisible, unseen forces of life in the quantum field or in however you'd like to say that, whatever language you'd like to use, whether you say it's with angels, with guides, with psychological forces, with the collective unconscious, however you like to say that,
mm-hmm.
when we play our cards right, we align ourselves with all these invisible forces. And then synchronicity happens, serendipity happens, the right doors open up for us, we meet the people we need to meet, and our lives take on a magical quality. But of course, that comes with faith and courage, and it means, as I've said already, undoing a lot of the programming. And that's one of the things I talk about in detail with clients, is that we are literally going through a deprogramming and a reprogramming process. We've all been programmed with certain beliefs about how to live. And these beliefs that we're running as a program are the ones that are leading us into unhappy, dead-end, stuck goals in life. So it's a question of having the courage to let go of those beliefs and reprogram yourself with a new belief pattern that's based on the ancient book of life. So a deck of playing cards.
Is playing our cards right just so, telling our truth, doing our truth, doing our bliss?
Yes, but there's actually a very specific meaning to it. It's a literal meaning. So let's get into that, because that's where we're going with it. The deck of playing cards, okay, I've alluded to this, is the ancient book of life. Let me explain. If you're familiar with an ordinary deck of playing cards, if you ever played Rummy, Spades, Hearts, Go Fish, Old Maid, any of these card games, and you know the deck of playing cards, there are 52 cards in the deck, right? You may never have ever made this connection before, but there are also 52 weeks in the year.
Huh, yeah.
There are four suits in the deck, the hearts, clubs, diamonds, and spades, and there are four seasons in the year. There are 13 cards in each suit, from ace to king, and there are 13 weeks in each of the four seasons.
Hmm.
If you add up the numbers on the cards, that the ace is worth 1, then you have the 2 through 10, the jack is worth 11, the queen is worth 12, and the king is worth 13. If you add those together, add 1 plus 2 plus 3, 4, etc., you'll get 91.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's 91 total values in each suit. There are 91 days in each season.
Wow.
Okay. 91 times 4 is 364. The Joker is the 53rd card. He's the 53rd archetype. 53rd symbol, he's like the remainder. He's the tantric anomaly. that balances the whole system. His value is in self plus one each of all the four suits, or one and one fourth. Put him back in the deck, we get 365 1/4. If you look on Wikipedia, it'll say that the deck of playing cards is from ancient Egypt, ancient China. We don't really know. It's older than the Bible. What we do know is that as soon as we have recorded history, about 3000 BC, these cards are already present in the historical record. The oldest surviving manuscript we have about the real meaning of these cards says that they come from Atlantis, from the continent of Atlantis. But we don't really know. We just know that they are in the ancient myths of our recorded history. They're already present. And they are an exact replica, an exact model of the life cycles of our Earth rotating around the sun. Now, in the Middle Ages, the church called this the Devil's Picture Book.
The Devil's what?
It was known as the Devil's Picture Book.
Huh.
It was known as a book, and this is important. Because what I've realized is that if you place a binding on it, now you have a little book. You can imagine putting a binding on one side of the deck of cards. Now you have a little book that represents the life cycles that we live on Earth, these cycles of our life. So it's quite literally, it's a book of our life on Earth. But it's a book without a binding, because every year the pages shuffle, so the binding needs to be taken off, because the pages shuffle every year. So it's not the Devil's Picture Book, actually. It's, in fact, the ancient Book of Life, the same fabled, mystical Book of Life that we hear about, and it's referred to in the Bible more than 20 different times. And I started to realize in my research that maybe these ancient biblical writers actually knew about it, and they weren't speaking metaphorically when they referenced it in their writings in Scripture. They were speaking literally about something that was known in esoteric spiritual societies as the Book of Life. But in our understanding, we know it as a deck of playing cards because it was hidden. And it was hidden on purpose. It was hidden for its protection so that it wouldn't have been burned and completely destroyed by the church in the Middle Ages. So what's interesting to me especially is that I was in training to be a Roman Catholic priest, and now I've come full circle. Practicing witchcraft now, according to the same church.
Yes, you are.
But in my own estimation, I'm actually really fully living my role as a priest. I'm offering divine inspiration and guidance through the ancient Book of Life, which is older than the Bible, and which the Bible tells us we will be judged according to what's written for us in the Book of Life. There's a passage in Revelation where John says, "Behold, I saw the Lamb, and the multitude thronged before the throne of the Lamb, and books were opened. A certain book was opened, which is the Book of Life, and the dead were judged according to what they had done, as it is written in the book." Right. So this is the Book of Life, and we can live according to it. And when we do, our lives become magical. The self-judgment gets lifted. This is one of the big things I see with my clients. There's a lot of self-judgment. Why can't I live like this? Why can't I do what I was taught? Why can't I make the money the way I want to make it? Why can't I have the happy relationship? But it's all because they're living a life that's not written for them to live. They're trying to live what they were taught to live, and they weren't taught how to live according to the Book of Life. So playing our cards right is a literal expression. And this is what I teach my clients. I teach them what their cards are. Because we have 13 cards, each of us, based on mathematics. We each have 13 cards in our life. It's all mathematical. So I like it. My rational side likes it because it's a mathematical model. And according to this mathematical model, we have 13 cards to play. When we know what these are, we can start playing them right. And when we start playing them right, and the key is to actually start playing them right and not play the victim card, another expression we have, to play the victim card. There are many of us who go through life playing the victim card. You may know what your cards to play are, but you're still playing the victim card instead of playing the trump card. So this is why we say we're all here to play our cards right. We have to play the cards that were dealt, like this. So all these expressions we have are actually literal expressions. that have been taken metaphorically, right? Holding our cards close to our vest, putting our cards on the table. These are all literal expressions. So I teach people how to play their cards right so they can have a magical life. And that's what I do on my coaching practice.
I grew up in the Catholic Church with seven brothers and sisters, Alexander Dunlop, and it was interesting, my experience with guilt, you know, about doing this or that, and I'm wondering what your take on that was for you in the Roman Catholic Church, if it was this, and I have a hard time getting over the facts that religion, so many religion use guilt, you know, to snare people, you know?
Well, it's certainly one of the best forms of control.
Is it?
Oh, right. I mean, the church, long before Madison Avenue and Mad Men figured out how to control our emotions, the church had been experts at that for centuries, using advertising and propaganda, fear-based tactics to control and manipulate. You know, and having said that, of course, there are true priests in the church. I met one when I was 17, and I met a true priest who was a conduit and a vessel of divine light that set me on my path. You know, and having been through the Jesuit seminary, I know Jesuit priests who are my friends. But the system as a whole and the structure as a whole uses a lot of fear-based tactics. I'm really grateful to see Pope Francis now as Pope. I think that's a wonderful breath of fresh air. But yes, I grew up with a lot of guilt too. And it's taken me many years as an adult. And I don't know if I even have fully purged all the Catholic guilt in my head. as much of the work as I've done.
Yeah.
You know, it's the idea you get them when they're young and you got them for life. And this was the mentality. If we build schools and we educate them, a.k.a. brainwash them, then we got them for life. And I meet many adults in my coaching practice who are struggling because they don't want to believe these things anymore. But the beliefs are programmed so deeply into the psyche that they don't know how to get them out.
And do you help them get them out?
I do, from my own experience. But this is something, as I said, is part of my own ongoing work. And it's part of my interest in the shamanic work that I do. I work with native shamans in the Shipibo tradition, in South American tradition. And their tradition is the ayahuasca tradition.
Oh, yeah.
And my own ongoing work, I have many ways that I see my own ongoing work, but one of them is in the ayahuasca tradition. And one of the benefits and one of the powers of ayahuasca is to clear out deep-seated beliefs that have been programmed into us that affect our physical health as well, our physical body. The aches and pains we have physically or the stiffness that we have physically is a belief pattern that's stuck in the body that is healthy for the body.
Yes. So they use this ayahuasca and other different forms to bring these things out, and then you can let them go?
You purge them. You vomit them out.
Vomit them out.
Yeah. And it's not... you know, it has been a mind-opening, expanding process for me to accept that beliefs come out in the vomit. But they do.
Oh, so you mean, I don't know much about ayahuasca. I've just heard the name.
Yeah.
So that you literally vomit?
You literally vomit.
Wow.
And in the vomit, out come things from the body that are not good for you, that are not meant to be in the body.
Kind of a forced detox, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And what they say is they don't call it throwing up. They call it getting well.
Getting well, yeah.
Getting well. So you're getting well. You're getting the things out that are poisonous.
It's amazing. Isn't it fascinating? Process. Is it actually it's an herb of some kind that
it's a plant.
It's a plant.
It's a medicinal plant. It's from the Amazon.
Huh.
And out of the thousands of plants in the Amazon, it's only active when two plants are combined together. So it's really interesting even to think about how indigenous people there figured out that if they combine these two specific plants together, it creates this medicinal effect.
Fascinating.
So, and of course, our government in its infinite stupidity has considered it like heroin.
Sure.
Considered it at that level. And so,
it's a controlled substance, is it?
I believe so.
Oh.
I think I'm not an expert on that, but
yeah.
I know that it's considered like any other drug by the government.
Sure. All right, stay right there, sir. Fascinating. Alexander Dunlop, his website, let me grab it here quickly again, spiritualnutrition.org, spiritualnutrition.org. My name is Patrick Timpone. It's so interesting he mentioned that. It's not the same, of course, and it's legal. But sulfur that we talk about, that we've been taking since September. So we've got, September, October, November, December. Wow, almost 6 months now. It's amazing. And I've mentioned it before, and I'll do it again. This is one of the most fascinating supplements that I've taken. And I started in late 70s at this game of natural health and started interviewing people, getting thrown off radio stations for doing the same. And, they had this fire, It's pretty amazing. And what it really is a pure organic sulfur that originally comes from a form of DMSO, and they crystallize it down, cook it down, and with no additives or flow agents or capsules or anything else to diminish its benefits and its effectiveness. And you'll find that most MSMs out there, and there are a kabillion of them, and most of them less expensive than ours, and people say, I can get this one, it's only $12, and it doesn't work. I mean, not like this. This product, you can really feel it. You'll get more energy, you'll get more clarity, pretty much. I mean, I can't guarantee it. But what I was going to get to is people remember their dreams. We get it all the time, over and over again. Why am I remembering my dreams? And in my opinion, this is one of the real benefits of spiritual growth that we're talking about this morning, is to become more aware of what is. And in my experience, the dream life is no more unreal than this is. This is a dream as well. And so it's just becoming more aware of your activities at night. Somehow the sulfur helps that, and then you can begin to work with your dreams and remember them. And then I was flying the other night, and I consciously chose to fly. I had to get over something, and you just fly. You can do fun things, and you just learn that you can do things just like you can learn here. I don't recommend flying in a physical body, of course. I'm sure someday we'll figure that out too, without propulsion. I'm sure we can do it. We just haven't figured it out. But anyway, back to the old ayahuasca idea, that when you get this oxygen in your body through the sulfur and through drinking water, you'll sometimes have cleansing activity. And some people would say, I'm getting sick, and then other people would say you're getting well, just like Alexander Dunlop was just talking about. And so generally, if people, like I had a fellow who wrote in this morning, he said that his kidneys were hurting when he started taking the sulfur, and I sent the email to Patrick this morning, because I said, I answered the man, I said, this is above my pay grade a little bit. And so Patrick sent back this answer to the gentleman. He said, pain is the absence of intracellular oxygen, and all of our kidneys are doing very well. When pain occurs, take more sulfur to deliver the oxygen to the site. My guess is too little water is part of the equation. So he told the fellow who wrote in, who's having pain in his kidneys, to drink more water and take more sulfur, it'll help to get oxygen in his kidneys and it'll go away. But most people tend to just stop taking the sulfur or something. Now, we don't get a lot of these kinds of things, but since it is a very powerful thing that we're not getting in the soil, sometimes you can maybe get a headache or something like that. And we've heard people that go through things. But that means you've got something that's powerful that works. And it's only $79 for a 3-month supply. And if you live in Canada, it's $94.50. And if you live outside Canada, United States, $99. Email me with your name, address, phone number, and then I'll answer the email, and then you can donate $99 to our site, because we don't have a particular button on the sulfur page to order, just the United States and the Canada button. So this is organic sulfur, 3-month supply, $79, $94, and $99, depend where you live. From OneRadioNetwork.com.
Would you like to feel more energy and have a better mood in 60 days or less? That's the guarantee I offer with a health-building food I'm about to introduce you to. If you apply the advice I'm about to share with you, you will support the restoration of your optimal health. When consuming this health food, you will support a better mood and endurance. You will also support increases in strength, energy, fat loss, and muscle development. You will be protecting yourself from colds, flus, infections, and cancer. By adding this one power food to your diet, you will support the removal of toxins of all kinds, including heavy metals, drug deposits, chemicals, and radiation poisoning. What is the one protein power food in nature that you can, for the first time, get in its undamaged state? It is unheated whey protein powder from grass-fed cows. In late 2010, the U.S. market was introduced for the first time to a truly unheated, undamaged whey protein powder called One World Whey. If you'd like to order One World Whey, you can just click and order it right here on OneRadioNetwork.com. That's OneRadioNetwork.com.
We're so proud to offer this product. I don't know, you've probably heard of Mike Adams of Natural News, and we used to do a show with Mike. He's a nice guy. He sells the One World Whey. So Mike, being the wild guy that he is, he had it, he had it analyzed. He just had it analyzed, and now he's analyzing a bunch of other ones. And he can prove that ours is the cleanest ever, the lowest in heavy metals than anybody else. It's a clean, clean product. So thanks for Mike for doing that. But of course, you're going to buy it from us, so you support One Radio Network, right? And plus, we have a better product, better price anyway when you buy one or more. If you buy the same, we're the same, but you're going to buy it from us, right? Because we get a commission on the deal, and you can buy the One World Whey and click an order right on the front page. Daniel Vitalis, people are excited about the benefits of balancing estrogen and testosterone with pine pollen. But where does it come from, and how do you know it's clean?
We work with gatherers over in China and Mongolia, and the reason is they've been gathering it there because it's been part of their traditional medicine for thousands of years. So they have a history of gathering it. They know how to gather it. Now, the only way to know something's clean is it's really important that you test the product. It's good to find out if they test it, because a lot of times they don't, because it can be expensive to test it. So, of course, we have to test the material and make sure it's clean. But what they do there is they gather it together, they sift it so that it's split open. Then we procure it from them, and we send it to be tinctured in organic alcohol. We use an organic grape alcohol that's a distillate of wine. It's a very high-quality ethanol to extract it, and that's because pine pollen is really rich in androgens.
Pine pollen from SirThrival, ridding the body of excess estrogen in men and women and increasing testosterone. Click and order, front page, OneRadioNetwork.com. Ongoing 10%, because Daniel's cool and he's helping us to get our customers back after they lost a lot on the computer, and because it was a good income stream for us. So please click and order through our website. And if you want to get on an auto ship or something like that, please do it through our website. And this pine pollen's amazing, guys and girls, for testosterone levels. And it's a pure food, so it's not like taking just tea from a doctor, which you can do from wild yam. But this is a food and one of the highest sources of testosterone building. And it's a great product. And we know with the estrogens and all the stuff out there, the chemicals, the soy, chemtrails, and things like that that are out there, that the estrogen levels get high, plastics, and then it bangs down the tea. And this will keep the T levels up there. It's a beautiful thing.
We are listener-supported. One Radio Network.
So if you use the promo code One Radio, forgot that part, you get the 10%. Promo code One Radio on OneRadioNetwork.com on the Survival Links with Alexander Dunlop. Talking about fun stuff, who we are, why we are, where we are, how, where we come from, and what it's all about, Alfie. Here's an email from Colleen. She wants to know, so how do we get started to play our cards right? Great question, Colleen.
Okay. Is that my cue?
That's your cue to come.
All right. So, Colleen, there are a few ways you can do that. And the simplest way would be to go to spiritualnutrition.org. And on the right-hand side of the webpage, there is a button where you can put in your date of birth. And then it will give you a free readout of what your birth card is and your yearly card and your monthly card and your daily card. Focus on what your birth card is. That's the explanation of the primary pattern of your life. So that's a free tool to get you started. From there, if that's intriguing to you and you'd like to learn more, you can order a written report and we can send that off to you. And it's about a 30 to 35 page report that will give you a detailed explanation of your 13 cards and your life path and how to start playing them right. From there, you can come for coaching as well. That's what I do. I coach people to play their cards right. But you can get started for free right on the website, spiritualnutrition.org.
So that would work because it's all math at some level, geometry, sure. Right? As many people have said. Mm-hmm. And that we as soul, do you think, Alexander Dunlop, that we incarnate at a particular time because of what we want to do as soul or what could be called our destiny or our life path?
Absolutely. We choose the game that we want to play. We choose which day we want so that we can have the game that we want. And that's very important because, as I've mentioned, I often see people bemoaning their cards. They find out their cards to play and I don't want those ones. What about those ones? I know these are the ones you chose. This is the one that seemed like it would be the most fun for you.
Well, it would make sense that have a challenge to do our dream or a destiny could be difficult for us because they would be lessons that we would want to learn this lifetime.
Well, absolutely. Right? And even better, even more so, would be the game wouldn't be interesting to us if it wasn't challenging.
if it wouldn't be difficult or challenging, you know, then what fun would it be?
Exactly. It wouldn't hold our interest. If it was too easy, we would lose interest.
Yeah, isn't it funny? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting that I've been trying to learn and learning screenwriting for about 10 years, and this is what I want to do next, is to make movies, you know, and to write movies. But it's one of the most difficult things I've ever done in my life, to sit there, you know, and to do that. I mean, it's easy to talk, right?
Well, Patrick, let's do this. What's your date of birth?
It's 11-7-46.
Okay, so I'm just going to do a quick lookup for you. Are you okay with doing
sure.
a little card reading right now?
My life's an open book anyway. So,
okay. 11-7 means that your birth card is the King of Clubs.
King of Clubs. Never heard that one. Now, where'd you get that? How did you get that? King.
It's a mathematical algorithm. Yeah. But it means you're born on the day of the King of Clubs, and the King of Knowledge. So you're a thought leader. And you're meant to wear the crown of your own authority and enjoy being a thought leader. But what's challenging for most King of Clubs, and maybe you've experienced this too, is you may resist wielding your sword of truth. You hold a sword of truth, but you may resist it. It may feel like a heavy sword to carry, or you just don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. You want to make peace with everyone, but you're meant to actually use the sword of truth. Cut, slice with your truth. as a king. So how does that resonate
for you? Yeah, I like that. So what does the sword of truth mean? Like you, the truth will set you free kind of thing, and it's difficult.
Yes. Huh. Or what, you know, the expression we've heard Jesus say, I didn't come to bring peace, but the sword. And the sword that cuts down through the sinew to cut false from the truth, to separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. So this is your role, is to be the king of knowledge, to separate what's true from what's false, and to lead all of us into the truth.
Well, I might have a hard enough time leading myself, brother. What is leading other people here?
Well, this is a challenge. And what's funny is that when I do a reading for someone else, let's say they're born as the Two of Clubs, and they'll say, "Oh, I want to be a king. Why am I just a two?" And then they listen. You know, kings have a hard time too. We all have our challenges in the way that we play our game.
So everyone has a challenge, regardless of what card you are, so to speak, because we all. So then, has it been your experience that everyone that you've met along the way, with all these fascinating things you've done on your website, you should go and look at the list, folks, on Alexander's website and see some of the things that he's done here. He's run with the bulls in Pamplona. He lived an ashram in India. Was an academic scholarship to attend Harvard College, was trained evangelical Protestant minister, slept with homeless people, led prayer groups and Bible studies on the Harvard campus, spoke with and currently apprenticed indigenous shamanic leaders, on. Surfed the Baja, created a prototype sparkling vodka product. I mean, holy cow. So did you... It seems like a dumb question, but you must have learned something from virtually everyone that you've met in all of these adventures.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. And what's amazing to me is that I had done all those things, and I thought I was pretty clear in my life. At the time that I found out what my cards to play are, I was the owner of a holistic health center in Manhattan. Uh-huh. And you know, by any account, I was living a dream life. I was a successful entrepreneur and doing what I love and helping people to get healthy. But when I found out what my cards to play were, it crystallized my life path. Because my card is the Nine of Hearts. And the meaning of the Nine of Hearts is letting go of anything that is weighing me down. And it means having certain chapters of life, which is why I've done so much, because it means passing through many chapters, many growth experiences. And it leads me to a higher level. We say things like doing it to the nines, mm-hmm. right? Get dressed up to the nines. So the meaning of the nine is to do it to the maximum, and I certainly have done things to the maximum. But what it means now for my path is that I help other people elevate their lives too. So it's the perfect role for me as a priest or a coach, because energetically I help everyone else now start a new chapter of their life or step up their game to the maximum potential.
Hmm. Interesting.
So well, that's what I'm here to do.
Yeah. My teacher has used the term, always do something to the very best of your ability and just do it till it sings, and then you can...
I would bet you your teacher was born as a nine.
I'm not sure what his birthday. What is the spiritual significance for all of us behind doing something to the nines or do it till it sings? I mean, why is that important?
Well, honestly, it's really only important for someone who's born as a nine. And
oh, really? I thought it would be like a universal thing.
No, this is one of the main things that I want to communicate, and I'm writing a book about these cards, this book of life, is that I see this happen over and over and over again. So-called spiritual masters have a message to share, but they're really only talking about their own cards to play. So they're speaking from their own life experience about what they think spiritual mastery looks like, but they're talking about their own cards to play. Right. So, for instance, as an example, if you were to give a spiritual talk you might say, you might repeat what your teacher had told you. But then for you, what's most important is getting clear on the truth, because you're the king of knowledge, king of truth. So your pathway is to be crystal clear on the truth, but it's not the same pathway for other people. For other people, it's a pathway of love. For other people, it's a pathway of dialogue or communication. For other people, it's a pathway of being practical and pragmatic, right? Because there's 52 different cards to play, plus the Joker, and they all have different roles, different aspects. But we generalize spirituality, and we make these general statements and blanket statements about what spirituality means. But it's different for everybody. And that's where the self-judgment comes in, because people can't do what you do, or they can't do what I do. They look at the list of things that I've done, and they feel like, oh my goodness, I haven't done half those things. Well, you don't have the same life path as I do, right? So your life path is meant to look like this. And then I show them what their life path looks like. Like, oh, okay, that resonates with me, right? So that takes away the self-judgment. And unfortunately, many, as I said, so-called spiritual teachers are just teaching one generalized truth and trying to apply it to everybody. And that leads to dogmatic assumptions. That leads to rigid assertions about how life is supposed to be. And that leads to self-judgment. Hmm. That leads to people suffering.
Oh, I took one of my teachers that said that, as the idea that whatever you do, to do it in the name of God and to do it the best you can, whether you're washing the dishes or cleaning the house or brushing the dog, you do it to the best, do it till it sings. That's the way I took it.
I like that.
Okay.
I like that. That makes sense.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah. And that is true.
And what could be the magic of that, Alexander? That concept. That's the way I...
Well, that's when you phrase it that way, then absolutely.
Then it's different.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And yes, as I said, and as I've noticed, that when we play our cards right, which is in that way, doing it to it till it sings.
Yeah.
When we're doing what we're here to do, our lives take on a magical quality. And so you may be doing the exact same thing in your life, but it has a magical quality to it. There's a Zen parable that I like. It says, before enlightenment, chop wood and carry water.
Mm-hmm.
After enlightenment, chop wood and carry water.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is what we're talking about. There's a magical quality. You're doing the same thing. You haven't changed what you're doing, but there's a magical quality to it. Your life has a magical feeling to it. So you have meaning in your life, right?
6 minutes before the hour with Alexander Dunlop, spiritualnutrition.org. So do you think doing the smaller things till they sing, like washing the dishes, cleaning the house or whatever, to the best of our ability, is that step to what Colleen asked about of how do we play our cards right, that helps us to get there?
Well, the first step would be to get clear on what our game is in life. And this is really important too, because most of us have the assumption that that level of clarity is not available.
Huh.
We have...
How would I know that? Yeah, that's too big. It's just too cool. How could I know that?
How could I know with crystal clear clarity what the purpose of my life is?
Yeah.
That we don't think it's possible. And I see people online, again, snake oil salesmen claiming to teach people how to find the purpose of their life, and they don't know the first thing about how to find the purpose of their life, because we're programmed to believe that life is a mystery, or we bumble through it, or we do the best that we can. But actually, we have a tool available to us to speak completely clearly what our life path is. And that's the first step, is to get that clarity. Because with that clarity, then we can make better choices for our life, and then we get different results.
Do you think it's difficult for some people to look at their cards or look at their, once they figure out their game of life, that isn't something that's really exciting, or to do this, or maybe for someone it's just to not just, but it's simply to have four children, or, you know, to be a mom. And do some of your clients have a hard time accepting that that could be as magical as becoming president of the United States?
Well, that's another great question. I have one example that comes to mind. I had a woman who came to me saying that she wanted to do something more spiritual with her life. She was a tax accountant. And as far as I know, she's still a tax accountant. She wanted to do something more spiritual. So we did a reading for her. We had a one-on-one session. And I looked through her cards and I started explaining to her that actually she's perfectly suited to be working as a tax accountant. And the sigh of relief that came over her.
Because she really wanted to do that?
Yeah, because she felt pressured from friends and from her mother.
Oh.
Her mother, who does spiritual work, she felt pressure that she should do something, quote-unquote, more spiritual with her life. But again, this gets back to these generalized concepts we have about spirituality. When, in fact, as you said, we can do anything, wash the dishes, raise kids, and it's all equally spiritual. So this is a good point to say that what the word spiritual really means.
Yeah.
This is my interpretation of the word spiritual. It means to be connected.
Huh.
What the word spiritual means. So when I'm offering spiritual nutrition, it's to connect people, to give people the nourishment to be connected to who we really are.
Here's an email. It says, so it seems that everyone born on the same day and the same year would have the same cards.
Correct.
Wow.
And I've met twins who, one of them is in jail and one is a holistic health coach. And they have the exact same cards to play. Because it truly is how we play our cards. How we play them. We are not our cards. Right? So Patrick, you are not a king of clubs. You're here to play a king of clubs.
In the game of life.
Yeah, you choose, as a soul, you choose how you are going to play this game token or this avatar or this game piece that you have. You choose. And your conditioning, your programming, your beliefs will determine largely how you choose to play your cards.
So my work
as a coach is to help people change their beliefs so they can change how they play their game.
So why would you think, though, you or I and other people would come into a particular religion, like, I don't want to pick on the Catholic Church, but no, you know what I mean? This was 50 years, 60 years ago, right? It was a long time ago, and they were really into mortal sins and you know, and the whole thing in heaven and hell and purgatory and limbo. I think they've dropped a lot of that now. But why would we come in to get this kind of programming? I mean, that was part of the deal, too.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good question. I recently watched the movie 12 Years a Slave. Have you seen this movie?
12 Years? No, I have not.
No, it's up for an Oscar, Best Picture.
Oh, yeah.
I won't talk about it then if you haven't seen it. I don't want to spoil it.
Oh, no, that's okay. That's okay.
Well, so this man is kidnapped. He's a free man, and he lives in the North, and he's kidnapped and brought into slavery. And he's a slave for 12 years. He gets out, and then he writes a book about it. And I was reflecting on it afterwards, like, wow, how did and why did that happen to him? We would never have had that story. It's a firsthand account of what slavery looks like. And I don't know of anyone else who was a slave and got out and wrote an autobiography about it.
Hmm.
And now it's a movie. So why did we get born into what we got born into? The lessons to learn, the story that we can teach from it. It's like the Chinese proverb, may you live in interesting times.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we live in interesting times where we're living through some oppression, some slavery, not physical slavery, but mental, emotional slavery, where we're slaves to a system that wants us to buy things and do things a certain way. But I believe I'm here to change the consciousness on this planet, to shift us in a quantum leap to a whole new way of living and breathing on this planet. And maybe you share that belief as well, that the reason why we're here right now is to change everything.
And we do that by changing ourselves.
Yes. In simple terms, absolutely. By becoming more aware and by starting to play our cards right.
So as we become more aware of what is, or truth, or on all levels, then we begin to see more clearly, Alexander Dunlop, of what our cards are and what the game is and how we want to play.
Exactly. And even to realize that it is a game, I mean, that's a huge...
Yeah, that's shift. A big deal, isn't it? Not take it.
That's huge. And I like your pun. It is a big deal.
That's right. Well, yeah. We all tend to take ourselves too seriously, don't we? My goodness. Well, so before we go, let's talk just a little bit about the physical side of it, because I know that you've really done a lot of different things on the physical level, and we have quite a few shows here over 6 years on physical things, whether it be the thyroid or cancer. You know, we talk a lot about it. What is your take on that, and what power we may have? Do you believe we have power as soul to help our body to heal? It's kind of a leading question, because I do, and I just want to see if you think so.
Well, I do. I could talk for a whole another hour about that. What led me into the holistic world to begin with was I had psoriasis and eczema all over my neck and face, and I had irritable bowel syndrome. I had blood in the toilet every time I was going to the bathroom.
My goodness.
And went to doctors, and the long story short, got the message that, well, we don't know what causes psoriasis, and we don't know what's going on. You have nothing wrong with you. We did all the tests. There's nothing actually wrong with your digestive system. Here's some medications to numb the pain, you know, painkillers, and to cover up the symptoms. And specifically, the one that concerned me was the fact that the hydrocortisone cream they gave me for my face, it said right on the label, don't use for more than 2 weeks. And I went back to the doctor and I said, listen, I have this psoriasis all the time, and this says only use for 2 weeks. And he said, well, here's a different one. He gave me a different one. And on that label, it said, don't use for more than 2 weeks. And eventually I was like, I can't live like this anymore. And he's the doctor, and I went to several of them, telling me, well, you're going to have this for the rest of your life. The best we can do is mitigate the symptoms. I said, hell no, I am not living like this. And that's what started me on my path of self-healing. I found juice cleansing. I started doing colonics, and I healed my body. And then on a whole nother level, through ayahuasca ceremonies, I have actually experienced physical healing and even exorcism. And then I have seen for myself now that by shifting beliefs, my body physically shifts. I mentioned this earlier, that we hold belief patterns in our body.
Mm-hmm.
And I practice yoga almost every day, and I've noticed that as I'm shifting a belief, my body will open up and my shoulder will rotate a little bit differently. And that's something related to a childhood belief that I have. Or if I'm doing a certain posture and I find a different stretch in the yoga position, all of a sudden a flood of emotion will come out of some incident on the playground that happened when I was a boy. And I realize that I've been holding all that emotion in that particular muscle in that particular place. And so I've experienced firsthand that physical body holds all the beliefs and emotions and thoughts in it. This is a giant superconductor that we're walking around in, and it stores everything. So it stores all the pain as well in the body.
Isn't one of the yoga teachers I had in the past, she said, "What the issues are in the tissues."
Absolutely.
Isn't it amazing how we do that? So then what about moving forward and dealing with the challenges that we have, the Fukushimas of the world, or chemicals, or pollution? What kind of tools do you think we have there other than physical?
That's a really good question. I'll be honest with you. My own approach, which is I don't necessarily recommend this. Now I'm just going to speak very personally. My own approach is that I don't read the news.
Attaboy. Now you're talking.
I mean,
now you're talking.
It's probably not the best long-term approach, but I choose not to fill my head with the negative, fearful, anxious-producing thoughts.
Yes, sir. I hear you. I hear you.
You know, and then I also, it comes to mind the work of the Japanese scientist,
Morimoto.
Morimoto, yes.
See.
And his work comes to mind. And he talks about being able to change the toxicity levels and the pollution levels of water with prayer and intention. And I have friends who that's what they want to do. That's what they do. They send prayers for the water.
Sure.
So that would be another approach we can take.
So then we could extrapolate that. And I've seen the photographs of Morimoto's work, and that's real.
Yes. Yeah.
That's real. So I would argue then that we could change the water or the chemicals or the minerals in our body the same way. Why would we not? If we could do it in a glass of water, we could certainly do it in our body.
You know, and when I realized that, that's when I started praying for my food.
Yeah.
Because our food is 70% water as well, whatever it is.
Sure.
We're eating is 70 to 80% water. And I thought, wow. That's why all religions have taught us to pray over our food.
I think so. Okay? You know, Alexander,
we can change the composition of the food before we bring it into our body.
I do that, you know, just I talk to my food before I eat it all the time. This is what I'd like to do here.
Yeah.
You know, I talk, why not, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, who cares, right? Why not?
I talk to my food, too, and I tell my food, thank you, I love you, thank you for sharing your life with this body of mine.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I talk directly to the food.
And here's an email from Jesse. If one wanted to do ayahuasca, how can you do it without going to South America? Explain what you mean by saying you went through exorcism. Some say evil doesn't exist. Well, that is a good question.
The first part of that question is there are some shamans who do travel to America, but they do it all underground.
Yeah.
It's not something that can be advertised or promoted publicly. I'm afraid you just need to offer your own intentions and offer your own prayers, and by serendipity, trust that you'll come across the right opportunity for you. That's all I can say.
Let me just ask, if someone were to locate somehow and they were felt moved to do that, would it be something that you could actually do just between you and God and the angels, or you'd want to have a teacher and a mentor?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think. Yeah. It seems a bit strong.
It's very strong.
Okay. All right.
And you're opening up a whole new level of reality when you're doing it. You do not want to do it on your own.
Okay.
I've been told that you can actually order ayahuasca off the internet.
Well, you can get anything off the internet, Alexander,
right.
So I wouldn't be surprised.
Right. So if you can do that, do not do it on your own. I strongly recommend that you don't do that.
Second part of the question. She says, what do you mean by saying you went through exorcism? Some say evil doesn't exist.
Well, what happened with me, and I'll just relate my personal experience, this was after I had sat through many, many ayahuasca ceremonies and had done many levels of healing work. I had an experience where it had been extremely challenging the night before. I was doing multiple nights in a row. And this particular night, hang on one second.
Sure.
This particular night, ceremony started after I had drunk the brew, and I was having a memory recall, maybe from a past life. I was seeing, you know, being led down a corridor and seeing a castle. But then suddenly the scene shifted in the vision, and I saw below me a sniveling-looking, golem-like creature. You've seen Lord of the Rings. This was a really hideous-looking, foul-looking creature. And it was definitely below me. And it was really scary-looking creature to see, really ugly. And knowing what I know and having gone through the training that I know is not to resist that or turn away from it. And so what I did inside of the vision is I bent down and got down to eye level with the creature, and I extended my hand, and I said, can I help you? And the moment that I did that, like a light shone down on this creature. creature. And two, it happened so fast, it was like two shadows. Two beings came down, grabbed it, and it shot up, almost like it went up through a tube, like a suction tube. And it went, and it went away.
Wow.
And the moment that it did that, I suddenly realized that that creature had been inside of my own energy field. And even though I was already, at the time working as a spiritual coach and guiding people, I still had this in me. And after much reflection after that, I realized that the metaphor that came to me was just like an oyster takes a grain of sand and puts a hard surface over it and makes it into a pearl because this thing irritates it right inside of its body. What I had done was all the irritations and all the suffering and the pain and of my own childhood, I had pushed it all into one little place. And it had become this little creature that was alive, was a living force, and it was like a little puppet behind the scenes that had been still pulling strings in my life, because it was a part of me that I hadn't acknowledged, and I had just repressed it and pushed it down, the pain and suffering from my own childhood. And then when I confronted it, and when I saw it, and I welcomed it instead of trying to continue to push it away, then it was taken from me, and it was lifted from me, and it was like going through an exorcism.
So could that be what some people call as evil, and so it exists, but it really doesn't, kind of both at the same time?
I'm not sure I can comment on that.
Okay.
We could call it evil, I suppose. It certainly looked evil to me. It was the most hideous thing that I've ever seen. And even more difficult realization for me was to realize that it was not outside of me, but inside of me. That was really difficult for me to swallow. I talk about it easily now, but it wasn't easy for me to come to that self-realization. And that notice how that had still been playing in my life and affecting me, even though I thought I had done deep spiritual work and had cleared myself, find that was still there was surprising as well.
So often we see in physical reality that people get hurt by what they hate, or they get hurt by what they fear, or they become. Have you experienced that?
Patrick, let me just pause you for a moment. I wasn't sure. Are we continuing on? I thought we were going.
We were only supposed to go for an hour, but I'm having so much fun. But if we can, you go a few more minutes?
I can. Yes, I can.
Okay.
So I just wanted to be clear. So, what was the question again?
Just this idea of that when we become against something, that it actually makes it stronger. My experience, and as some people. I mean, how often have we heard about the people that are so against pornography, right? The whatever, the priests or the ministers of the, and then that's what they do, right? Or the whole thing with the Catholic Church, or the people that fought against cancer their whole lives and then they get cancer, right?
It breaks my heart when I see all the placards. I don't know how it is for you where you are in Texas, but here in New York City, many of the stores have little posters in them that say, "Together we fight against cancer."
Right.
"Together we train to be cancer." And I'm thinking, no, you're just creating the same cancerous impulse that leads to cancer in the first place. Because the fighting and the stress and the struggling, that is what becomes cancer in our body. And this goes back to our first part of our conversation about the spiritual realization of not trying to be anything other than who we are right now, and letting go of that struggle, letting go of that stress, letting go of that belief that we are not right exactly as we are. And once we let go of that, that's when we can actually start growing spiritually.
Of course, there's people that would argue on the other side of the coin
soon.
That, well, you're just sticking your head in the sand, and just because you don't believe it can hurt you, it still can.
This is another good point, and that's a question that I talk about with my girlfriend all the time. She's a healer.
Uh-huh.
She does energy healing work. And yes, it's what do we believe? And if we don't believe it will hurt us, will it hurt us? And
boy,
I don't fully know the answer to that question.
Well, I think we're going to find out. I mean, I think, you know what I'm saying? I think that's one of the reasons why we're here. To learn that answer. And I think it's to the positive, but I can't prove it. Here's an email from Dee. Would you please ask Alexander to speak a bit about relationships and the compatibility finds in cards or peoples and paths? That's a great question. I was going to kind of wrap with that. Is this idea of folks have talked about my teachers. Some of my teachers have said that we really find God in the heart of our beloved. And how important do you think it is, or how beneficial, to find someone that we really love and that loves us?
Wow, that's you're one good question after another. So there's many ways to address this question. One is that we do have different, let me say it like this. There are some people in their cards to play who actually prefer to be alone. They just do. And even still, and I've met many of them in my coaching practice, they still suffer from the programming that they're meant to be with someone else. And this is our Walt Disney Judeo-Christian model of happily ever after. That the only way to have happily ever after is when you find your soulmate. And that's just not true. There are many ways to live happily ever after. Some of it includes finding your perfect partner. But it's not that way for everyone. It wasn't too long ago, you know, a few hundred years ago, that we actually thought and believed that happily ever after meant a life of celibacy. Right, to be a monk or a nun or a priest and live a celibate life, communing directly with God, that was actually how to find your heart's desire.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Right, so now we've swung the pendulum the opposite way, where we think the only way to have happily ever after is to find another person who you can share your life with. And it is true for many of us. But we have different ways of expressing that. And again, we can see that in the cards. And I see it over and over again, unfortunately. People just aren't compatible in their cards. But they're struggling and trying to make the relationship work. And they're just not compatible. Conversely, when we know what our cards are, we can see who we are compatible with. And then we can make better choices in who we choose to be in relationship with.
I think that's what that one emailer was, the last one was kind of alluding to. So do you actually hook people up with depending on what day they were born?
I tell them who they're compatible with, and I tell them what to expect in different relationships, depending on who they're connected with, what their cards are, what your cards are. You know, for instance, the shadow card for you as the King of Clubs is the Queen of Hearts. So if you were to be in a relationship with a woman who is born as a Queen of Hearts, you could expect that she would be constantly revealing your dark side to you. And that might be a difficult household to live in for you, because...
But it'd be good, though, right?
Because she would be your teacher, right?
Yeah.
But you might not want to be in an intimate relationship with a woman who is a spiritual teacher to you. You might prefer to have her as a counselor or a therapist or a best friend. But you might find it really challenging to be constantly exposing your own shadow to your partner. That might not work for you. This is an example, right?
Oh, I see. Yeah, it's a good example. Yeah.
It's an example of how that might be a very challenging and potentially incompatible romantic relationship for you.
I see. So it's just choice. We have choices, and depends if we want to live with the Queen of Hearts or just...
Right.
See our shadow, you know, every February 2nd or something.
Well, yes, and it's you know, you may want that in a relationship.
Sure.
It's just a question of what do you want in the relationship. So I help people to choose relationships based on what they want and to find the cards that are compatible for them.
Yeah. Well, this is fun stuff, and a couple emailers just sent in, Jesse and also George, that it said they really appreciate you and what you had to say here this morning. So,
well, thank you so much.
Nice too.
I didn't realize it was going to go longer than an hour. I would love to keep talking to you, but I actually have somebody outside waiting for me.
Well, that's because you have to make a living, brother, and you're in New York City where coffee costs $5 a cup. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I stopped drinking coffee recently. It's been good savings on my checkbook.
Yeah, I'm on the wagon too, but you know, every now and then, you know, it's going, wow.
Yeah.
Well, Alexander Dunlop, you're a joy to talk to, and I appreciate everything that you've been through and what you're doing. SpiritualNutrition.org, and folks can go on there and put your little birthday thing in their free playing card reading, and then they can get a whole readout thing if they're interested in this work.
Yeah. Right? Well, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's been a pleasure talking to you as well.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.